Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H-Town. Let's get to work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Let's do it.
That ball sky deep to left field, all the way back near the wall, and that ball is gone. Grand slam for Angel Martinez. And just like that, the Guardians have taken a four-run lead here in the 10th. And Class A finishes off the game, a 10-6 final as he strikes out Cam Smith to end this one. Angel Martinez with a grand slam in the top half of the 10th inning is the difference tonight as the Guardians win 10-6.
One ballpark. That grand slam that you just heard would have been a home run in, and it was the ballpark that it happened in last night, Daikin Park.
Well, if you're only talking Major League Baseball, sure. I'm sure if you put college and high school ballparks in there, it might not have
been
a home run.
Maybe, I don't know. That is such
grand slam in the 10th is never feels like, that's all right. We got him right where we want him.
The only thing I would say about that is we welcome you in here on a Wednesday. The Astros lose last night, as you just heard. Todd Callis on the call, Space City Home Network. 10-6, the final score. There's a lot to dig into here, especially with all the.
Is there?
All the.
I want to dig into the fullback battle for the Texans.
All the energy we came into this week with. When will the Astros lose a series again? In 48 hours.
I knew it. Hubris, Sean.
I know.
Hubris is what you
pride,
succumb to.
Pride comes before the fall, is what I was told. Yeah. So, a grand slam. The only thing I would say about a grand slam in extra innings in this day and age, Seth, is like, all right, they do start with the ghost runner on second. You know, like it starts with a little chicanery already. If you can get a base hit, get a couple guys. If you can get the tying run to the plate, you know, if you get the tying. Yeah, didn't happen. at all.
Sean out here talking about inflation.
Yeah.
Okay. The grand slam isn't as notable after you get the ghost runner on second. And yet, still really, really hard.
It's hard
to come back. And as we said yesterday, look, this is a Guardians team that hasn't missed the playoffs since 2015. The organization is good. The fact of the matter is the Guardians had battled the Tigers until the final game of that series.
Yeah.
But we knew that this Astros team has gone on this stretch and this streak, partly through better play by some of the under-heralded guys, but also that they've just, when Hunter has been out there and when Framber has been out there,
Nails.
They've won those games.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to withstand Josh Hader not playing like himself and Hunter Brown not playing like himself.
Yeah, they gave up all 10 runs, the two of them. Hunter gave up six. Hader gave up the grand slam, and that was that. Yeah.
I'm going to tell you one thing, Sean.
Yeah.
I do not need to see Hunter Brown again before the All-Star break because, like he said after the game, I just kind of felt like they were all over everything.
Mm-hmm.
Whether he's tipping pitches or whatever it might be, that he needs to get in the film room, figure that out.
Yeah.
Maybe if he figures it out sometime in the next couple days, then maybe give him his regular rest and have him start before the before the All-Star game.
Mm-hmm.
But if not, they need to go back to the lab on this.
Yeah.
We can't mess around with Hunter.
I was getting a lot of this last, it's already coming in too, by the way, on the text page, people telling me to go back to Jamaica. Like it's since I got back. They've lost these two games to the Guardians.
Sean's just he's an immigrant. He's here legally, just trying to make a go of it. And you guys have succumbed to all the political fervor.
Right.
To where you're like, send him back.
Go back.
Send him back.
Exactly.
No.
Yeah.
No, Sean is an American.
I'm a citizen.
Okay.
Yeah, I was born in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, man. I was
Can
born
we put
here.
The, put down the swords
Thank
for
you.
A minute.
Thanks for having
here.
My back, man, on that. I appreciate that. How big a jinx
that's
am
I? That's what I'm saying publicly. I alerted ICE this morning.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
In this country
There's
of ours.
People knocking on the door in the lobby.
Yeah.
This is how big a jinx I am. And this is I'm agreeing with you people. It's not the, hey, he's back from vacation and they lost a couple games to a team, by the way, to a team that had lost 10 in a row and has now scored more runs in these two games than they had scored in the previous 10. It's not that. It's not that. It's not that we did a segment yesterday where we said, these Astros have been amazing since such and such a date. And we did individuals. Hunter Brown and Josh Hader both were on that list of a segment that we did yesterday. This is the wild one. I have been to two Hunter Brown starts in my life, two.
Yeah.
The last time he gave up this many runs in a start And I was there last night, by the way. The last time he gave this many runs in a start, July 6th, 2024, in Minnesota.
Yeah.
In Minnesota. I was in a game in Minnesota where Hunter Brown had, that was when he had started the turnaround. That was when Hunter Brown, he had like eight straight amazing starts. And I'm like, oh yeah, I'm here for Hunter Brown. And he gives up seven runs in like the first two innings to the Twins while I'm there. That's the weirdest thing for me personally is like, okay, he's had two awful starts in over a year. Other than that, he's been incredible, and I've been witness to both of them.
Were you sitting in Joe Sutton's seats there in
last
the Diamond
night?
Club for that game? No, the previous one.
No, it was in Minnesota, Seth.
That's right. They won in Minnesota.
Yeah.
Okay, so you certainly weren't. I thought maybe you went to the ballpark and watched on the scoreboard. This is a problem, especially with you last night, where you're sitting in the second row right there behind home plate.
Yeah.
The last time that I remember you sitting there, at least when I was with you, that was when Kyle Tucker got hit in the shin.
Yeah, God, you're right.
Kyle Tucker got hit in the shin. And you are, I don't know, you might have to be banned from all Astros games.
How
selfish are you?
No.
Sean, I took a logic class in college, and if there's one thing I remember from that logic class, it's that if two things happen at the same time, then there's definitely a causal relationship. that you show up and then bad things happen for the Astros. That's rock solid logic right there.
That is.
That's enough to convict you in a court of law.
Call that correlation is what that is. But they're such good seats. It's a really good vantage point.
Yeah, correlation equals causation, dude, Sean. That's what I remember. Correlation equals causation.
I had forgotten.
I got a C in that class, and I'm pretty damn sure that I've got sound reasoning.
It makes
here.
Sense. It sounds good to me. Well, it doesn't sound good, but it sounds logical to me. Yeah.
It's called ipso post facto ad hoc Shano.
I forgot.
Something like that.
I forgot that you and I were there in those seats for the just the gruesome thud of that ball hitting off of Tucker's shin in that game.
Oh, now, remember, man. I said he'd be back the next
day.
But what I didn't realize at the time that I was sitting next to a cursed man.
No, here's the thing about the Tucker thing. I'm going to take up for myself. What happened? That happened on June 3rd, I think, last year. What happened? They went on their best run of the season without Kyle Tucker. I was doing the Lord's work. They needed to get Tucker, an MVP candidate at the time, the hell out of the way. You know, the same way they got him the hell out of the way this year, and they're in first place by like seven games or whatever it is. So
Hunter, let's talk about this.
Yeah.
All right, do the Astros play down to the level of their competition? It's still really hard for me to buy into that because, yes, the Guardians are coming off a 10-game losing streak. They win two versus the Astros. Yeah. The Astros did score six runs in this game.
Yeah.
They got contributions by multiple players, both the good ones and the bad ones, but they were miserable hitting with runners and scoring or with runners on base. They left a lot of dudes stranded last night.
Not only leaving dudes stranded, and I was thinking this last night. Last night was the first game where I felt like the quasi minor league lineup they've been trotting out there came back to roost. And here's why I say that, Seth. The bottom part of the order, I know that Yiner Diaz went 0-for-4 batting cleanup. Cooper Hummel and Zach Short came up in so many situations with guys on base. You go back and look at the play-by-play of this game. There was one 1-2-3 inning that the Guardians had, and it was in the second inning. Other than that, it felt like the Astros had multiple guys on base every single inning. Cooper Hummel goes 0-for-4 with three strikeouts.
Yeah.
Zach Short goes 0-for-5 with four strikeouts. It's one thing to go 0-for. It's another thing where you're not even putting the ball in play. You're not moving guys.
Non-competitive at-bats.
This
is what it was. They were 2-for-21 with runners in scoring position.
That's what it felt like.
2-for-21.
Yeah.
They left 12 men on base.
Yeah.
But when it comes to, for those of you who said, Sean, Seth, you guys are being idiots. They play down to the level of the competition. Yeah. And I said, listen, that's baseball. You don't understand baseball. I'm smart. I got a C in my logic class. No. They were the two studs on your team, Hunter Brown and Josh Hader, two of your all-stars.
Yep.
They let you down versus bad competition.
They did.
I have to concede defeat.
Yep.
Despite my C in my logic class and everything else like that.
On this particular,
now remember, the guy that's conceding defeat also got a C in his logic class.
That's right.
So
That's right. Take that for what it is. Okay, now this is the text.
All right, my ego won't allow me to continue this ruse, by the way. I got an A in that logic class.
Oh, okay, look at you.
So, moving on.
That's good. No, that's good. I can see that. Sean Pendergast equals the new Ted Cruz.
You are. You're Ted Cruz.
I am.
When it comes to sporting
events. When it comes to Hunter Brown, at least. When it comes to Hunter Brown, not all sporting
Interesting.
Events.
Interesting. And you took a trip to a tropical location last week.
I did. I bailed. And they went on their best streak of the year.
They swept
the best team in baseball, or at least the team with the best record in baseball. Sean, just admit it. You're the Hunter Brown kryptonite, first in Minnesota, now last night. Great show, guys. Thank you. Yeah. Yeah, that's... I'm not going anywhere. Like, I'm still doing the show, but do I need to ponder my attendance at Astro games? Perhaps. Perhaps I do. A lot of go back to Jamaica on my Twitter timeline last night. If you want to start a GoFundMe, then send me back. That's cool.
Sean, it's again, if A, then B.
I know.
Sean goes to an Astro, or Sean goes to Jamaica, the Astros are great. Yeah. Okay, that's good enough for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My co-host Socrates dropping it on me.
Hey, Sean Pendergast comes back from Jamaica and goes to a game, then the Astros fall apart.
Yeah.
You have been convicted in a court of law.
I know, and it's not just me. It's not just they fell apart. It's their best players fell apart last night. That's the painful part.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, boy. All right. Off and running. Out on Wednesday. Let's shift gears. We'll get back to the Astros and headlines a little bit later.
In all seriousness, by the way, I'm joking about the horrendous logic there. I took a logic class in college my freshman year, and it's probably one of the best things I ever did. It really did. It helps you. It really helps you think more clearly and kind of see through a lot of BS arguments.
There you go. All right, kids. There's Seth's recommendation.
It's been a weakness as a radio host, though, sometimes.
Oh, being logical?
Yeah. If there's one thing you know about media these days, whether you're talking about politics or sports, best to throw logic to the side
That's how you make the big bucks, man. Throwing logic to the side.
I know, it is.
It's so true. All right. Coming up next, we'll do a lot of illogical things. No, we heard from Raphael Stone yesterday. We, on this show at least, did not hear from him specifically about Kevin Durant and the trade. Why the trade for Kevin Durant? A Kevin Durant anecdote about Ime Udoka from Durant himself, and a Rocket legend picks the... Well, we'll get a prediction on the NBA title next year from a Rocket legend. I'll let you guess who it is and who he's picking. We'll do all of that coming up next. Yeah, this is what I choose to believe. I choose to believe it was not my fault the Astros lost last night. I really think this is the case, and this is how it felt at the game. And we'll get to Raphael Stone on Kevin Durant here in 2 seconds. Text message, there's just too many guys out. I mean, it's overdue regression to the mean. In all candor and all kidding aside, you've got a lineup where Yiner Diaz and a sub 700 OPS is your cleanup hitter. You're leaning heavily on Cam Smith right now, who's not even played 100 professional games yet, I don't think. Probably 100 by now with the minor league games last year and the where we are in the season. But you get my point. And then the bottom, starting with Victor Caratini, the bottom five spots in your order last night were Victor Caratini, Cooper Hummel, Mauricio Dubon, Zach Short, and Taylor Trammell. And you actually got decent games out of, I mean, Dubon's a legitimate big league player, so I don't want to lump him in just because he's sandwiched in between Hummel and Short in the lineup. I don't mean to lump him in with, I'm just reading, you know, who the names are. It's the Hummels and the Shorts and the Trammells of the world. You know, and this was a funny thing last night too, Seth. So the game it's 6-1. Astros claw their way back in. The game's close. It's 6-5. They get some guys on base, and Amy turns to me, and one of these, you know, bottom of the order guys are coming up. She's like, "Do you think they'll throw a pinch hitter out there for one of these guys?" It was probably for Short or Hummel because they struck out every time they were up to that point. She's like, "Are they going to put a pinch hitter out there for either of these guys?" And I'm like, "Amy, if they had somebody worth pinch hitting, they'd be in the lineup right now."
Right. It's the guys who are in the
Shane
lineup.
Shane Whitcomb is the guy coming off the bench.
The guys who are in the lineup right now are the guys who previously would have said, "Why are they putting him into pinch hit?"
Yes, that's they're starting.
So the questionable pinch hitters, you know, Zach Short had a 168 career batting average before that Dodgers series.
Yeah.
And he did great in that Dodgers series. Yeah. But there is an element of how have the Astros won all these games despite all of these injuries? a huge part of it has been that the relievers have just been money.
Yep.
And then you've got Hunter and Fromber who have pitched like all-star caliber pitchers. Mm-hmm. So on a night where both Hunter and Hader have some of their worst nights, it's going to be really hard to win those games.
Yep.
The whole 13 series without a loss stretch, I'm like, there's a little bit of flukishness to that.
For sure.
You know, it's not always going to lay out perfectly, but you're going to have games or, you know, series of games like this where the fact that your lineup is as decrepit as it is, it's going to hurt you. The trade deadline moves we're watching are actually guys returning from the IL.
Yeah.
You know, Jeremy Peña coming back, Christian Walker coming back from paternity leave, which that child could not have been born at a worse time. Christian Walker is really starting to look like the best possible scenario.
Yeah.
This kid's got to learn, okay? Yeah. Sometimes you got to sacrifice for the good of the family.
That's right, man. He could have held out.
You stay in that womb and don't come out. You will come out kicking and screaming.
Yeah.
But try to make them drag you out of that womb during the All-Star break.
The All-Star break, man. Yeah. Couldn't you have held off? We're joking. Okay, let's get to the Rockets here and Rafael Stone. Why trade for Kevin Durant?
He's Kevin Durant. I think he's really good. He's super efficient. He had a great year last year. So I mean, he's obviously not he's not 30 anymore, but he hasn't really fallen off. And we just think we think he has a chance to really be impactful for us.
Yeah, very soft spoken on that. Very 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 humble on that whole thing. The billboards are up, Seth. The Kevin Durant billboards are up around town here in Houston.
Was the question, why did you trade for Kevin Durant?
Yeah, I don't know if that was, I don't know if I'm paraphrasing, but you know.
Oh, no, I mean, it sounds like that's what the question
was. Yeah, because his first part of it was, he's Kevin Durant.
He's Kevin Durant. Yeah. He's really good. If I go into it deeper, did you see how well we shot last year?
Exactly.
We did not shoot very well.
No.
Yeah, we need to get more guys like that can shoot the basketball through the hoop on the first attempt.
Yeah,
they're really good at shooting it through on the second attempt.
Yeah.
But we'd like to just go ahead. I would love it if we're not gushing about how great the Rockets are on second chance opportunities.
On offensive rebounding.
There just aren't that many. There aren't that many offensive rebounds.
Jay Billis pointed that out during the NBA draft. They happened to be talking about the Rockets, and he's like, "Well, Kevin Durant's probably going to hurt their offensive rebounding numbers, not because he's a bad offensive rebounder, but he's going to make shots, and there's going to be fewer offensive rebounds available." Here was Rafael Stone being asked if Ime Udoka, you know, if he advocated, if he was a big part of wanting to bring Kevin Durant here.
Organizationally, we only do things when it makes sense for all of us, and so he was definitely an advocate for it, but only in this way. You know, that by no means was there pressure to do something like this. We thought we were going to be a very good team coming back no matter what, when the deal came through in this manner, I think we all wanted to do it.
This is what feels so good about the trade for Kevin Durant, because yes, the age is an issue, the injury history, that's obviously, you'd be an idiot not to concede that that's an element to it.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're in a good position and you genuinely feel you're in a good position, like let's say this is a normal business that the Rockets have. He just had a great annual report. You don't all of a sudden go out and take out a high interest loan to try to
grow your business.
Right. So if the Rockets had had this promising season and then all of a sudden traded away all their first round picks for Kevin Durant, or traded away Amen Thompson and Shane Goon for Kevin Durant, or something like that. Yeah, that would, as we said in the lead up to it, oh boy, I don't know about this. This feels like a desperate move by a team that does look like they've got a solid foundation.
Mm-hmm.
So what they do is, they end up paying a fair price for an older asset, but it was not desperate whatsoever. And it didn't feel from the outside looking in that there was ever a time where the Rockets were just thinking like, oh, we got to get over the hump here. We got to get over the hump here.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you from personal experience, this is what, when I was a young player in the NFL and I was on a team that had gone to the AFC Championship twice in 3 years, and it felt like, oh, we're almost right there. We just got to do something. And the team, and Coughlin, who was basically the GM, or at least co-GM at the time, they went hog wild on signing a bunch of older free agents like Carnell Lake and guys like that.
Yeah.
And awesome dudes, but they spent aggressively and spent way too much for those guys, and it blew up in their faces.
Yeah.
So that I've always been hyper vigilant about that. Like, yeah. don't feel like making a huge aggressive move is what you need to do to get over the hump. So that's why this feels so good to me personally, because it wasn't hugely or overly aggressive.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. Now, the people who would disagree on that would be the people who think Jalen Green's going to become an all-star. But I don't think you and I are two of those people.
And that's without any hatred towards Jalen Green or something.
Sure.
I think it's okay to say, yeah, Jalen Green's a really good and promising young player, but I'm skeptical that he's ever going to become a superstar or somebody you pin your hopes on. I mean, because everybody brings up the people that would defend Jalen Green bring up the playoffs and how it's only one series by a young player in his first time in the playoffs, and they ignore all the times that Ime Udoka himself chose to keep Jalen Green off the floor in the fourth quarter in critical situations.
In the regular season, yeah.
Yeah. Like, so it's not like this was something that I think there's this perception by some people who really want to defend Jalen Green that somehow the Rockets are basing all of this off of one bad series.
Right.
Like, no, there was a track record of how they felt about Jalen Green before this.
No doubt. All right, let's hear from Kevin Durant himself. He was on with Steve Nash and LeBron James. He was on their podcast, and he shared this anecdote about going against an Ime Udoka coach team.
Yes. I even love that you could throw zones in there. We could, they mixing up defense.
That's an evolution, I think, in the last 6 months even.
Mm-hmm. That's like, when we play Houston, like Ime Udoka does a good job of that. He would go one possession regular man, next possession zone, go back to man, the next three possession zone. All in the first quarter.
Throwing you off balance.
Yeah. In the first quarter. And it's like, okay, how good you are as a team, how connected you are as a group, how well you pass, guys are unselfish. If a coach does that and you're not prepared for it,
you're all off balance. You got no rhythm.
Okay, yeah, that honestly, everything they said there, I'm thinking of Vic Fangio with the Eagles.
Yeah.
So Vic Fangio, the defensive coordinator of the Eagles, because Fangio asks his players to do a lot of mentally challenging things, a lot of disguising, all of that looks like on paper you're thinking, oh yeah, why don't you just switch everything up from down to down? Just do that. It looks great on paper. It's really hard to get the right group of guys to execute that. And that's why Fangio has had some stays where the fan bases think he's a moron, and then he goes to the next spot and people think he's a genius.
Yeah.
And it really comes down to, does he have the right group of guys that can execute that stuff? And I think that's why Udoka feels so good about the culture and the core of these guys being able to do things like that. You take that group of guys out there yesterday and try to do all of the mixing up defenses from possession to possession 2 or 3 years ago, and it would be an utter disaster.
Yep.
There's only so much. So it takes that cohesion. And again, that goes back to, man, you can't trade away three of these young guys,
because
then you're just starting. It's a brand new team.
Yeah. It's I just think that's cool. Like that, you know, when Durant's thinking about, okay, where are the places, you know, where are the places I got to get out of Phoenix? Where are the places I feel like I can go to win? That Ime Udoka, in his style of play, his ability to make chess moves, all have the experience of going against it. For Durant, probably played heavily into thinking, okay, I can be part of this now. You know, I can benefit from being part of this now. If you can't beat him, join him. So I thought that was really cool. Matt Barnes has a podcast, former NBA player, and he had Vernon Maxwell on.
He's my fellow mustache buddy.
Rocket
legend.
He's
got a creepy mustache like the one I'm growing.
Max has a... Yeah, you're still going, huh?
Yeah.
Boy. Seth is pining for a divorce lawyer endorsement big time right now. Get on the YouTube and Twitch if you don't know what we're talking about. Seth's growing out the mustache. But Matt Max was on with Matt Barnes, and Matt Barnes asked him for, hey, man, I need a wild prediction so that next time you come on here, you can tell us you were right about it. Here was Matt Max's wild prediction.
Max, this is the last show of the summer for the season. What is one bold prediction for next year? What's something you want to hang your hat on that remember this day, and we're going to clip this shit, and next year we're going to say, Max, remember you said this shit on this day. What is that prediction for you?
Damn, Rockets gonna win the championship next
Ooh,
year.
I ain't mad
that's
at
what
it.
The damn bowl. That's what
I
the bowl
love it.
The prediction is that's hey, it. The Rockets gonna win that bowl. Yeah, I that's what it is.
The Mad Max thing with the Rockets is really interesting to me. You know, and because if you were here in 1995, like him walking out on the team in the middle of the playoffs was a big deal. He walked out because they had traded for Clyde. You know, he was their two guard. They traded for Clyde, and now all of a sudden you've got Clyde, one of the greatest of all time, playing two guard, and it compromises Vernon Maxwell's role. He literally quit on them in the playoffs back in 1995. They went on to win the championship, so it was probably, you know, if you're just talking, I don't know if there's any cause and effect, but if you're a Rocket fan, you're like, oh, well, I wouldn't change anything about that playoff run because it ended the way we wanted to. But, and I think it's good, like the organization has obviously embraced him again. You know, he's embraced the organization. But just having remembered what that was like at the time, like if someone had told me that even like 20 years, yeah, now it's 30 years, that he'd be, you know, that Rocket fans, they love Max.
He'd
you
be
know?
The beloved, the defender of the faith, really, in now, a lot of ways. He fights your fights for you on social media.
Yeah, well, thank you. Here was the thing I would not have known in 1995. That
right.
Twitter would become a thing. And I think social media, to your point, Seth, I think social media has helped that re-embracing part for Rocket fans.
Well, and he kind of straddled it, too, because all of that happened before the age of social media. And that really, even before, that was when sports radio was very much in its infancy.
Correct.
So the kind of discussion around things wasn't as extreme and intense.
Yeah.
So he didn't, the vitriol probably was, even though it was real, it wasn't as loud.
Mm-hmm.
But then he jumps in with social media and you see a different version of him, and all is kind of forgotten and washed away.
It's not.
Not to mention, like, the younger people today have zero memory of Vernon.
Yeah,
Maxwell.
Oh, yeah. No, it's 30. You know? It was literally 30 years ago. More than 30 now. God, that's wild. 30 years ago for that championship. Hey, did you see the video of Ime Udoka and Fred VanVleet? Taking, I don't know if it's boxing lessons or if they're part of a boxing class or something like that. There's a video of Fred VanVleet and Ime Udoka that was making its way around the interwebs. Ime looks in good shape too, man.
They're they're working out somewhere, but it's at like an athletic training facility of some sort.
Yeah.
But they're doing boxing drills.
Boxing drills, okay. This makes me kind of think they're going to get into more fights this year with other teams.
Ooh, that'd be great.
Yeah, like he needs to be ready.
Well, did you see that video that was floating around yesterday of the golf fight?
Yes.
where the guy, I forget who it is. It's a former NHL enforcer. Is the big guy. He's not the antagonist.
Oh, no way. That was somebody famous?
Because it came out on Spit and Chicklets. So it's a former NHL player who was an enforcer. And
wait,
he's a big dude.
There's a social media account called Spit and Chicklets.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Oh, it's huge.
I've never heard of it.
Again, my brother would be devastated that you don't know this. Because my brother's a big NHL guy, and he's always amazed that we don't talk any hockey.
Never. Hey, Dan, never heard of Spit and Chicklets.
I'm going to text him during the break. Sean doesn't even know about Spit and Chicklets.
Good.
So there's this, all you see when you watch this video, there's this dude, and you can't tell whether he's a tall guy, short guy, whatever it might be. But he's foaming at the mouth, yelling at somebody about pace of play.
Yeah.
And you can tell he's kind of drunk.
Yep.
So when he chooses to engage the big guy, who turns out to be a former NHL enforcer, forget his name. you know, listen, smaller guys can beat up bigger guys. They do it all the time.
All the time.
If you have skills.
You know how to fight.
And know what you're doing.
Yeah.
This guy's chosen method versus an NHL enforcer was to bum rush him.
Yeah, stick his head down and just bury his
hard head him as possible.
Bury his forehead in the middle of his chest.
Dude.
Threw him in the lake.
The big dude throws him into the lake. And then little guy, to his credit, comes back and keeps coming back multiple times. Big guy grabs him like a hockey player. That's when you first knew. The first time I watched it, I was like, oh, this guy looks like he knows how to fight like a hockey player.
Yeah.
Because he uses his length to his advantage, grabs the golf shirt / jersey, and then just rains down blows on him. All the while yelling, bang!
Yes!
Bang!
Thank you.
Bang!
That's the best part.
Repeated overhand right.
He's literally using onomatopoeia for like Batman sounds. You know, like when Batman would punch people and it would just stick boom up on the screen, like the word. He was saying bam, bam, bam as he's raining blows down on him. And then, Seth, that that happens. The bam, bam, bam. The guy falls down. He gets back up, comes back for more, gets three more bam, bam, bams, comes back for more. And then the NHL guy just hip tosses him about 15 feet.
He threw him
like a sack of potatoes.
People thought it was fake. People thought it was AI because he threw him so far.
That was the most impressive part. I mean, the punches were impressive, but he tossed that guy.
Honestly, I was fully expecting when I started watching the video that it was, because I love the videos where the smaller guys, guy beats up a bigger guy.
I do too.
Because they're saying like just tags him just right or something.
Yeah. But not happening.
This guy was not that guy. No. He did not know what he was doing. I cannot tell you more. Listen, the public service announcement. It's not a, yes, bigger they are, harder they fall, all that stuff and everything. But that only works if you have genuine skill.
That's right.
If you're a smaller guy facing a guy, and this big guy, you know, he wasn't in NHL shape, but it made him even scarier because he was a big dude.
Big dude, man.
But still, like, looks like you can tell, all right, this guy used to be somebody.
Yeah.
This guy is not a big doughy dude.
No.
If you do not fight that larger man unless you genuinely know what you're doing. But credit to him for just keep coming back for more. Credit to the little guy for coming back for more.
Credit the moxie. Don't credit the intelligence one bit.
No.
What was his name again, Ben? Ben looked
it up. Nick Tarnaski.
Nick Tarnaski is the name of the NHL player.
Oh, and Nick Tarnaski, to his credit, at least from the clip I saw, he was basically saying, like, and his buddy was saying, like, dude, no, you don't want this.
Yes.
The first time the little guy bum rushed him, he didn't hit him. He dragged him into the lake.
He used his own momentum and to drag him and throw him in the water.
That little guy, like a Gila monster, comes crawling out through the weeds.
Yeah.
Coming back after him.
It's an excellent video. There's two versions of it out there. There's the first one I saw was like 10 seconds before little guy bum rushed him. There's a version that Amy and I watched last night right before we went to bed that popped up. Where you see like the minute and a half lead up to it.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Where all the argument about slow play and things like that on the golf course. Yeah, find the extended cut.
It's a very entertaining video. The little guy's friend was really annoying me. I felt like he should have gotten popped.
Because
he kept telling the big guy to lay off. Like the big guy is just standing there.
Dude.
The big guy himself is telling the little guy to stop. But meanwhile, little guy's friend is like, come on, just quit it, man.
You're 100% right. You're 100% right. Little guy's friend was the worst in that
video. Was acting like he was a total Karen.
Yes.
He was acting like he was like, we got this on film. We got this on film.
Yeah.
I was like, I would erase that video. This is not proving whatever you think it's proving.
No. Little guy made the first move in physicality and in being
over
a jackass.
Over and over again.
That's
he had every opportunity to not be in
self-defense
that fight.
For Tarnaski. All right. Payne and Pendergast with you. We got some headlines coming up. We'll dig into the Astros game from last night. We've got injury updates for the Astros. I don't know that we have enough time in the show to do all these injury updates, but we'll try. We'll do that coming up next.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines presented by Men's Tea Clinic.
That ball sky deep to left field, all the way back near the wall, and that ball is gone. Grand slam for Angel Martinez. And just like that, the Guardians have taken a 4-run lead here in the 10th.
Yeah. It came really close. Game of inches, like you hear it say, you know, a hit away, that ball there leaving the yard. Happens. But I like to fight. I like to fight on our guys.
Hi, that was Joe Espada. Yeah, that home run that you heard, Todd Callis on the call, Space City Home Network, that grand slam from Martinez that you heard from the Guardians would have been a home run in one out of the 30 Major League ballparks. If you like the Crawford boxes, and they're a blast to go sit in, but the problem is that if a fly ball by the opposing team gets anywhere near it, typically it's going to land in the first few rows, and that's what happened last night. Unfortunately, the bases were loaded at the time, so the Guardians, who had taken a 6-1 lead in this game by knocking Hunter Brown all over the ballpark, Astros are able to claw their way back with a very ratchet lineup. We're able to tie the game at 6. That was the cool. And Jose Altuve getting the game-tying hit late in the game in the 8th inning with two outs. That was really cool. You kind of, at that point, Seth, when they tie it up on an Altuve 2-out base hit, you feel like, all right, this is meant to be. They've had guys on base all night. they've been the better team all night. They had guys on base the whole time.
They ended up 2 for 21 with runners in scoring position. That's how frustrating
it was. Yeah, it was terrible.
Their timeliness of their hitting, and where they've been so good in a lot of regards, it just evaporated last
night. Yeah, and this is not to pick on these guys. These guys are fringe major leaguer, minor leaguer guys for a reason, but two guys in particular, Cooper Hummel batting sixth in the lineup last night, and then Zach Short batting eighth in the lineup last night. Because they had so many guys on base all night long, the Guardians only had one 1-2-3 inning all night, and it was in the second inning. So from the second inning on, the Astros had things popping on the bases, but they just weren't able to push runs across. You basically had two pitchers batting for you last night in the 6-hole and the 8-hole. Cooper Hummel got up 4 times, had 3 strikeouts. Zach Short, 5 at-bats, 4 strikeouts. And it's one thing to not... You know, it's one thing to not get a hit in those situations. It's another thing just to not even put the ball in play and make something happen in those situations.
Yeah, and then the other big part of it was Hunter Brown. Hunter Brown was just simply not himself.
Yep.
They were
on it,
hitting him with a lot of hard contact.
Yeah.
And Hunter is a guy that has had allowed the softest contact in the league or in the top three, and they were just tagging him over and over again. And it's to the point where you're wondering, all right, is there, what are they picking up on here or something? He ended up throwing more sinkers than he typically does. Like he drastically altered his typical approach because they had either figured something out about him or they I have a hard time thinking that wasn't what it was.
Yeah.
It wasn't like his control was so off or anything like that. They looked like they knew from the very beginning, that first home run. It just, he was waiting for the changeup, you know, he sat on that changeup and crushed
it. Well, and the base hit, the 2-run homer, the guy that got on base with ridiculously hard contact to left field. So they were on him last night. It'll happen. So yeah, hopefully it's not the beginning of any sort of trend. Here was Joe Espada last night after the game talking about Hunter Brown's performance.
Yeah, I thought that stuff was really good up to 99. I thought he can, his execution, he could probably tell you that it wasn't as good as he wanted to be. But he battled for 6 innings, you know.
Yeah, it's one of those things, especially in the first inning. I think he threw 23 pitches in the first inning, which is an astronomical amount for Hunter Brown to be throwing in any inning.
Yeah.
You just get off on that. You get off on that foot, and it's hard to dig out of that sometimes.
I mean, and he still got a lot of whiffs, mm-hmm. but he only struck out, was it 2 or 3?
3.
Yeah.
You know, I know, because I had him over 7.5 strikeouts on Prize Picks last night.
Yeah.
So I was following that one a little closely. Yeah, just 3 strikeouts last night.
If they hadn't lost the night before, it would be easier for me to flush this one.
Yeah.
But now having lost 2 games in a row, and even though they did some good things and they scored enough runs to win if Hunter Brown had his classic performance or anything, it does. It's brought me down from my cocky perch from a couple of days ago.
Oh.
It's a good reminder that, man, with this team, they need to have overperformances by lots of guys on
routinely.
Any given night.
Yeah.
You know, and just last night it was extra because Hummel doesn't do it for you, Zach Short doesn't do it for you, but then also the two biggest studs on your team, Josh Hader and Hunter Brown, also let you down. It's
going
to be really – and yet they went to extra innings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's still – okay, I feel better about it now. I'm back to my cocky perch, Sean.
Yeah. They went extra innings with a lineup that had 3 minor leaguers in it, basically. It's fine.
I'm on the cockiest of perches.
See, get back on it, man. I'm watching you. I'm going, why are you jumping off that perch right now?
I wavered
perch.
A little bit, you know?
It's
that point in the movie when the hero questions himself.
Yeah, there is that point. Yeah,
so I had it. So it lasted about 3 minutes, and now I'm back. I'm back, and I'm ready to go kill the dragon.
They are still 6.5 games up in the American League West. In the American League, Toronto's now leading the AL East, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Toronto's leading the AL East. The Astros are ahead of them by 1 game. Toronto's the 3rd seed. The Astros are 2nd in the AL, and Detroit is not running away with it, but they're 3.5 up. They're the clear cut number 1 in the AL right now.
2 things about the Blue Jays leading the AL East right now.
Yeah.
George Springer's having a great year,
yep.
For those of you who care or haven't seen. And the Yankees, let's see, they're 3-7 in their last 10 games.
I love that. Games. That's my favorite part about what you just said, the Yankees sucking in their last several games. As far as injuries go for the Astros, We've only got a couple minutes left in this segment. I'm going to cherry pick the ones I think are the most important because they literally sent out an injury report with 15 names on it yesterday. I would say Spencer Arrighetti scheduled to throw live BP today through a 30-pitch side session on Friday. So he's throwing at least now. JP France, who of course is trying to come back from a shoulder, he's in Florida going through a planned deload, whatever that is. His next live BP is scheduled for today.
I don't know. That was my deload. deload spelled D-E-L-O-A-D.
Yeah.
He's deloading.
Yes. Luis Garcia. He's load managing. Luis Garcia, we reported on that yesterday, began his rehab assignment, and he struck four guys out in two innings. Javier threw a live BP on Monday. Two innings pitched, 35 pitches. Yordan continues to work out and has not begun to hit yet.
His injury is listed as right hand inflammation, by the way.
Yeah.
Right, if there's anything we know about the Astros, it's inflammation is always just inflammation.
There's
nothing more to see here.
It's fine. It's all good. Chaz McCormick, who normally I probably would have glossed over just because it's been a long time since Chaz has been good. I'll take Chaz McCormick back over some of these other guys in the lineup in a heartbeat right now. He's begun his rehab assignment at Sugarland over the weekend.
I'll tell you what. Actually, defensively too, look, when Altuve's in left field, it is what it is. But when I see other guys out in left field and just see some of the things they've had to do in the outfield, that's one of the things that's made this team way better than you'd expect them to be, is that they've been one of the best defensive teams in baseball. So, yeah.
The only other one I want to touch on here, Jeremy Peña. He left rib fracture, we know that. He is listed as working out in the weight room, no baseball activity yet. Jeremy Peña, who's already yoked, I'd love to think that they're sending him to the weight room and that's the only place he's spending his time, and he's going to come back from this rib injury looking like a roided up late 80s WWF wrestler. Like, he's just going to come back totally yoked. Jeremy Peña in the weight room, that's what he's doing right now.
Did you do Luis Garcia or no?
I did. Well, yeah, I said we had mentioned him yesterday. Yeah.
So, I mean, he did. For those of you who missed it, he pitched his two innings in a rehab start in the rookie league down there.
Yep. Struck out.
So, right now, Garcia is the most likely of the. Garcia before any of these other guys for the pitchers, right?
Maybe. I guess.
Most likely to come back sooner. He's the furthest along.
Yeah. He's actually pitching in games and whatnot. Yeah. Arrighetti is the one who I'm really, really hoping, you know, that the other side of the All-Star break, we're starting to see things like rehab starts and getting close and whatnot. That's the big one for me.
He threw a live batting practice yesterday.
Yep. That's the big one for me.
I don't know. You know what I get offended by? It's not his fault, but I just seeing Brendan Rodgers on the injury report, why is this a thing?
Why is
Brendan Rodgers a thing?
Okay, him in general. Okay, yeah.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Not his injuries or anything.
Not his injuries. Just him.
It's not his fault.
I get it.
But I mean, it was a four-way battle for second base and during spring training, and then all of a sudden, the first part of the season, you're like, I guess Brendan Rodgers is just a fixture.
Yeah.
Really earned his way in there. Yeah. Anytime Dubon wasn't playing that day, but Brendan Rodgers was out there.
Wasted day.
I was like, what? What are we even doing here?
We're burning daylight. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. The ESPN executive coaching scout ranking of top 10 at each position. Texans did not get a defensive tackle on the board, but these top 10 defensive tackles that these folks voted on does at least beg the question, did the Texans get the 2023 draft right? We will explain coming up next.